Okay, before we begin the episode, I'd like to remind you na matutuloy na ang Kwentong Creatives event this March 23. So, matagal namin pinaghandaan to. So, I'm really excited to finally get this on the way. We're gonna have bands. We're gonna have live performances by Bird, Sauce, Nanay Mo, The Coens, and DJ ET. And these guys have been guests on the podcast. They're friends of mine, they're friends of the pod, and I'm really excited to share their live music with you guys. And we're also going to have a live podcast recording with audience Q&A before the performances, no? And we're going to feature like the best of KC. And I'm so happy that these guys have been gracious enough to share their time with us. We're going to have Atom Araulio, Shaira Luna, and Cookie Santos. So it's just gonna be this nice like creative jam, just talking about some of the best topics we've covered on KC. And there's just gonna be this live audience Q&A energy that I really enjoyed from the last time we did that. So I'm gonna source questions on our Facebook group, but you can also attend and ask questions yourselves. So really excited to get that going. And we're also going to share merch. So there's going to be an official launch of KC merchandise. I'm really excited to put that out there. So yeah, March 23 at Balcony Music House in Makati. There are early bird links and sign-up sheets on our socials. So see you there, Club Kwentong Creatives gig. Let's go. Okay, so welcome to another episode of Kwentong Creatives, and for this episode, I sat down with editorial and food photographer Sunny Thakur. So you may have seen his images in Grid Magazine or in many of the fresh new restaurants in Manila right now. I really love his work. Nakakagutom talaga. If you follow his page, parang minsan magagutom ka late at night seeing all his food posts. But I really enjoyed talking to Sunny. I think a lot of photographers and, you know, creatives who are trying to start off their career can learn a lot from what we talked about today. He shares a lot of his lessons from mentorship. So he's an example of a creative who got his start, you know, learning the craft from experienced mentors from Manila to New York. He shares all of his biggest lessons on these. He also talks about the flexibility of being a photographer in the Philippines. You have to learn how to shoot food, how to shoot fashion, corporate, or landscapes. No? So that's also very interesting there. We talked about the founding of Grid Magazine, no? And his love for Philippine culture and just photographing subjects in the Philippines. He shares really interesting stories about shooting on the field. No? May maganda siyang shinare about this memorable story of being on the field and living with the cowboys of Masbate and meeting this legendary figure, si Bangaw. So it was an entertaining story. He shares with us all of his learnings from, you know, learning how to connect to the subjects that he's shooting, which is, you know, really something I think we can learn from, no? Para finding the humanity in that craft of what we're doing. And also he talks about relationships with clients, no? Because I think some of the best, you know, commercial work really comes from a good relationship with clients. And that's how I kind of expect, you know, that's what I've been seeing from his work. And, you know, it shows because Sunny's such a cool, chill guy to talk with. And I can imagine working with him on these creative projects can be very fulfilling, no? So kaya maganda yung kinalabasan, no? And so he also shares, you know, his experience and advice on, you know, bringing out fresh and exciting concepts when working on clients. And some of my favorite takeaways too are how he approaches promoting his work and sharing his work on Instagram. You know, I love that he has this approach of, you know, no shame in sharing your work, and the people that you want to connect to will find you eventually because you did that. So really good conversation with Sunny, and I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. All right, so welcome to another episode of Kwentong Creatives, and today I'm joined by someone I've been wanting to talk to for a while. We're always exchanging messages on IG, and now I finally have the chance to pick his brain. Welcome to the show, Sunny Thakur. What's up, man? Welcome.
Hey, Gio. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen Sunny's work, he's a commercial and editorial photographer, and he's captured many beautiful images of food, people, different places. And maybe just to start things off, I want to ask you about what you're currently craving right now, or like what kind of food, you know, are you into right now? I like asking this question to different musicians in terms of music, because it's not like, you know, I'm always just into one kind of music, but it's changing right through phases, you know. And
yeah,
the thing I notice with you is every time I love like this eating in one place in Manila, you always end up working with them, whether it's Crosta Pizza, Squadawari, who we had in the show before, Jake and Tony, Pelia's Kitchen, Rebel Bakehouse, you know, all these great spots. Like you have your eye on them and you get to work with them. So yeah, I'm just curious, man. Like what are you into now?
Oh my God, that's tough to answer because there's so much good food out there. And I also just had dinner, so I'm really full. Can't really think about what I've been craving for recently, but like just off the top of my head, the past couple of weeks have just been honestly like just simple comfort food in the form of like sandwiches and burgers. Honestly, like I haven't been craving for much outside of that recently.
Yeah, I saw you post something recently. Is that, I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but is that how you approach your Instagram sometimes? Like, yo, I'm just craving this type of food. And if you just have some of these images on, you'll just put it up, no?
100%. It's really what I'm feeling. Like my Instagram, the curation is really like, what am I craving for? Or what did I shoot recently that really hit the spot that I could use like right now? So that's, and I post that like, you know, strange hours, like I'll be craving for something like in the middle of the night and be like, this is probably going to get really, really bad. Like, you know, like the views aren't going to be so nice, but I'm craving for some noodles right now. So I'm going to post some noodles. And yeah, that's,
dude, I love
I
that.
Guess
just
that
keeping
is
it real.
The extent of like the thought process for my Instagram.
Yeah, just keeping it real. Usually you'll hear people be like, oh, you know, you got to post at the peak hours, no, don't post it at dead hours, but you know, it's just keeping it authentic for the craving. And that, I guess that's why people connect to it. Maybe other people are craving at the same time you put it on, though.
Yeah, and I'm happy if there's like three or four other people that just see it and they message me and they're like, shit, can I get this like at this hour? Like, is it, are they still open? Like, then I know I've like found my audience and I've found like, you know, my people.
Yeah. Mga late night ng food trip.
Exactly.
So yeah, so let's get into some of your background. So you have like an extensive portfolio, but I'm just curious on how photography came into your life. You know, I like asking this to different photographers, filmmakers, even designers, because it's like there's like a different point, a different milestone in their life where they started becoming fans of, you know, some images, and when they could actually, you know, appreciate the craft of whatever they're doing eventually. So yeah, what does that like for you? Did you have someone in your family who was taking photographs, or how did it find you?
I think a very common story for a lot of photographers is, or anyone like in visual arts, like a very common story is a family member handing them down something like a camera or, you know, a set of like paints or whatever. I never really had that. My parents, they weren't creatives, although they do appreciate the art. They were not creatives themselves. So it didn't start that way for me. I wasn't handed down anything. I wasn't handed down a camera. I took a trip back to India, which I hadn't done by myself. So in 2009, I took a trip to India by myself. And, you know, like, as cliche as it might sound, like the whole purpose of it was like trying to reconnect with my roots. But more than that, it was really just trying to figure out if I could, you know, make something. And I really fell in love with photography during that trip. When I came back, it's a much longer story, I guess, for like later on. But it's I just basically tried to figure out if I could make a living from this hobby so I wouldn't have to do something else to kind of like feed this passion.
Mm-hmm. Did you spend some years in India, or did you grow up here in the Philippines?
So I was born in Baguio and I was raised in Manila. So I spent almost no time in India. I would probably go there once every 2 years, maybe. My mom's side of the family lives there. So every now and then, you know, we visit. But otherwise, I think I'm more Filipino than Indian sometimes.
Right, right. Yeah, I ask because it's interesting how, like, what arena these young photographers kind of, you know, cut their teeth into the craft in. You know, I talked to Karen De La Fuente, C Rocket, mm-hmm. who went to gigs early on. Even Shira Luna would go to gigs, and that's where they kind of got familiar with their instrument. And for you, was that on your travels and your going to India?
When I started to take this a little more seriously, I figured the only way to do it is to ask, right? Like, there are so many other photographers who came before me. And I figured if I asked a big enough, you know, number of people, there's bound to be one or two guys that are going to say, okay, yeah, you can be my assistant or you can be my apprentice. And that was the path I took to kind of like, you know, hone my craft and then fill these little gaps in my knowledge. So very early on, I worked with photographers like Tom Epperson, Paco Guerrero. It was actually the two of them that really helped with, you know, my foundation in photography.
That's cool. Yeah, Paco's my neighbor, actually. I see him like jogging sometimes. I've been wanting to talk to him, get him on the pod too, eventually.
Yeah, but good luck. He's always out of town. So.
Oh, nah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, especially in visual mediums when you want to learn the career. And there isn't like, you know, I mean, there are courses you can take, but the best way is kind of to learn on the fly, and having a mentorship really kind of puts you in spaces that you wouldn't otherwise get into without that apprenticeship, right? What were you shooting in those early years when you were deciding to make it into a career?
I was shooting like everything, honestly. You know, one of the first things I picked up, or one of the first things in the business side of it I picked up from both of my mentors early on was the market. Like, for a working photographer, the market in the Philippines is so small that you kind of have to be flexible enough to, you know, shoot food the one day and then architecture the next, and then do headshots, whether like fashion or corporate, you know. So it was just me. I mean, very early on, I was also very infatuated still with photography, and I was just taking pictures of like everything. You know, like, oh, beautiful sunset, that, you know, that deserves a picture. Taal volcano, 100% deserves a picture. My lunch that looks really delicious deserves a picture. So I would like shoot everything very early on. And then, I don't know, like even recently, like you'd think I've kind of like edited that down. I just don't shoot as much, I guess, but the subjects that I'm really attracted to, like, it's just so, you know, it's really very wide.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to get into that and kind of get into what are the different adjustments you make internally when you're shooting food, when you're shooting portraits, when you're doing landscapes, you know, because that's like a different hat, you know, every time, but kind of like it's the same eye you're using, though. But I guess I also want to transition to food. So much I want to talk about more today, but I want to talk about how you you're also the co-founder of Grid Magazine, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And Grid Magazine, I wrote this down here, describes themselves as a magazine about the Philippines made by travelers for travelers. And I guess hearing your background now, you know, for you traveled around the Philippines, came from India, you love traveling, that just makes a lot of sense why you would co-found a publication like that. So yeah, how did that begin, and you know, what are the learnings you took away from that experience?
I think to be very fair, a lot of the initial back and forth happened between our other co-founders, Christine Ponacher and Paco Guerrero. I think it was the two of them that kind of came together first to try to figure out if there was space for this. But together with our other partners, Miguel Nachanceno, Nachi Ugarte, we all were kind of frustrated that, you know, we could never have a platform to share stories about the Philippines. For example, between Paco and I, we've already been doing work for like Travel and Leisure Southeast Asia. Paco has been doing work for Condé Nast Traveler and a bunch of other publications. And they always just want to do like a listicle on the Philippines and then maybe have like Boracay and Palawan on the list and then call it a day. It was very, very surface level. And we thought, okay, we've been pitching and no one's been listening. So maybe if we find like-minded people, we could, you know, build this platform and then tell our own stories. Unfortunately, this all happened when like print was like taking a nosedive, but we were like, you know what, let's just try. So we put together a really small team. It was like a really small, scrappy team, but it worked out. We turned 10 this year, and
hey, you know, nice.
Thanks. It's no doubt that we've like slowed down. The pandemic really kind of, you know, took a toll on us. But when you look at like the early days of Grid, and if you look at Instagram around, you know, around that time, or not even Instagram, you could just do like a Google search of the Philippines at that time. It's funny. All you'll see is like landscapes that look like Amor Solo-esque paintings, like a little Bahay Kubo with the, you know, stuff in the back, like very like countryside feels. Like that was majority of the search results for the Philippines. When you look at it now, it's so much richer. It's so much more diverse. You know, we're going to be proud about it, but we like to think that we had a little bit of like, we had a contribution to that. Like, I think, you know, like just talking to, honestly, after the first couple of issues, the messages that we'd receive in our inboxes would be very like, hey, you know, thank you for doing a story on like the cowboys of Masbate. Like, you know, I mean, it's just like these underrepresented voices that are like, I had no idea that, you know, my town was this amazing, that you guys would, you know, give it the time of day, give it like 10 pages on a magazine. So thank you. So this was the kind of, these are the kind of conversations we were having with people, you know, that they were, there's just so many stories from all parts of the Philippines. And we're super happy to, you know, to see so many other content creators, different forms of like media, just putting the Philippines out there, which, you know, we're super happy with where we are.
Yeah, man, for sure. Grid was definitely at the forefront of that. I remember, yeah, actually, that does make sense. 10 years ago,
2014.
My wife is an editor, and she had one of her first projects editing for Grid when she graduated college. So, and she was doing this like series from this bartender who would, you know, make drinks with, and like some with like unique Filipino recipes. And back then, you know, you weren't seeing a lot of those.
No.
And you guys are really breaking these, you know, hyper localized, you know, stories, which I think definitely set the foundation for what, you know, a lot of the content you're seeing here today too.
Yeah. Actually, just to add to that cocktail series, that's still going actually.
Oh yeah. Nice.
Yeah, we just signed another round of that. So it's been like 10 years of the same guy like going around the Philippines and like looking for ingredients, and I mean it was a sponsored thing, you know, it was a great way to collaborate with a very local brand. And you know, that's how we wanted to do it. Like we wanted to represent or like put local at the forefront. And I think we've done a pretty good job at it, I think.
Nice. So yeah, let's start talking about the different shooting assignments. Since we're here talking about grid, and maybe we can start with travel, no? And I'm curious what that is like for you when you're on assignment on a travel project. Let's say you go to some place and your writer is also working on an article, but how does that maybe like paint us a picture of, you know, how do you guys go into that assignment? What are you trying to look for? And yeah, what kind of dialogue goes between both of you when you're out on assignment?
Well, to be perfectly like frank, it's actually been a while since I've done a travel assignment, but I can tell you a bit about like some of my favorite ones.
And sure, sure. Yeah.
There's quite a few like different approaches, right? Like one of my favorite projects was the Cowboys in Masbate and how that happened. So this was 2012 and 13. So this was two years before Grid actually happened. But this was kind of like the precursor to, you know, like, you know, this is a great example of a story we could tell if we had people listening or if we had a platform. And so how this happened was we just kind of like Paco and I were talking to people and someone literally just brought it up out of the blue. And there was absolutely no information about it online. But I think it was the color grader of like one of Paco's projects. Her uncle was the rodeo manager. And she was like, no, it's real. Like it's like the cowboys and stuff. And so we were like, oh,
so wait,
shit,
cowboys, okay, so, like people who like they're riding like wild, I don't know, like horses and
100% like the image you have when you hear the word rodeo, like
yeah,
the like think Texas or whatever, or like in the US, that's exactly what it's like, but in Masbate. Like yeah, just take a second. Or, yeah, it's insane. It's super wild. And the crazy thing is like this is a national competition. That means there are smaller local competitions around the Philippines to find the best cowboys in their like barangay and then have them represent, you know, their town in this national competition. And mind you, some big universities actually participate. So Xavier University in Davao, they actually have a team. So it's pretty big. Pretty serious.
Xavier Cowboys.
Yeah, no, I'm not even kidding. It sounds silly, but it is what it is. So that one, it was me, you know, like 10 years younger, 10 years healthier and more agile, I guess. Went in without a plan. I was just asked to meet this rodeo director, and I spent like 11 days documenting this rodeo. I couldn't afford a hotel room, so they actually housed me in one of the public schools. Like I slept on a desk, like on a banig on a desk for 11 days. If I had to do that now, my back would be screaming. But back then I was like, you know what? Like how often do I get to do this? So with this one, there was no story in mind. There was no plan in mind. It was kind of like, take pictures of everything, you know, do your portraits, do your, like, I was like, I have to do my portraits. I have to do some landscapes, maybe like some action shots. And I really enjoyed it. Like the 11 days just like flew by so quickly. When I got to Manila, I edited down the images, showed it to Paco and a bunch of other people. And they're like, holy shit, like this happened. This is in the Philippines. And I was like, 100%. Like I'm not even kidding. Like this is right in our backyards, but we just didn't know. So I went back the next year. I brought some prints over for the participants and they were very excited to see their pictures because no one had ever done that for them. By that point though, like slowly like media outlets were coming in. So there was a crew from ABS-CBN for one of their shows. Anyway, fast forward to 2014, when we were putting issue one together. Christine Funachere helped me put together the story. And it was basically like a diary format. So it was like my day-to-day explaining the rodeo. And we did an as told to type of piece. Christine helped me put it together. So that was one approach. The other approach that I really enjoyed.
I want to kind of highlight that too about how you spent 11 days there, slept on that banig, and it's kind of like assimilating into, you know, that community, right? And, you know, it's trust, no? Parang, kind of, you know, you're the guy with the camera, the outsider who's there, but eventually, how do you get into that space where they just kind of go about their everyday, you know, and you're just there?
Do you know,
that's one of the more difficult things to do.
At some point, like, they really just don't care. Like you're just another person that's there for this. Like, the same reason everyone else is there, you know, like, it's for this rodeo, to celebrate this. And if you haven't read the piece, I'll send you a link after we chat.
Yeah, yes, please. I'd love to.
So the link was, the name of the story, or like the title, is A Man Called Horsefly. Because my roommate was this cowboy he's from Boracay, and his name is Bango. Like, he does not have a first name or a last name. His name is Bango. And it was so vivid. Like, I remember him. I remember hearing him before seeing him, because he was from Boracay. He sounded like, because he had like puka shells on his neck and then on his ankles, right? So whenever he would take a step, you would just hear the puka shells like get closer and closer to you, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh man, this guy's pretty, like, he's pretty cool. He, back then, so this was 2012, he was 60 years old, but he did not look a day over 35. I mean, he was this like really tall, super jacked, like island Tito with a fucking cowboy hat, right? And he was my roommate. And I thought, like, man, this guy is like probably gonna be so cool. He's just gonna like leave me. Like I'm just some random guy from Manila who's taking pictures. But every morning we would wake up at about the same time, and we had to fetch our own water for our showers, right? So we would actually, like, he went first and then I was gonna go, and he was like, I'll wait for you. And I'm like, you don't have to. And he's like, no, I'll wait for you. I'll just smoke, like, you do your thing. And I'm like, okay. And we would, like, for the 11 days, we had breakfast together, we had lunch together. Like, he was my roommate. And, like, it taught me so much, because, like, he just didn't give a shit. You know what I mean? Like, he just respected that I was there taking pictures, and I respected that he was there. He was apparently, like, because he's a graduate in, like, animal husbandry from, if I'm not mistaken, UP Los Baños. And he was there to be a judge for the rodeo. Apparently, he would go to the rodeo every now and then. You know, typical of someone living the island life, he didn't have, like, you know, a solid agenda. Some years he was there, some years he wasn't. It's actually kind of like a sad story, because, like, the next year, he didn't turn up. Like, he didn't show up. And we were all trying to figure out what had happened. And, like, the year after that, we learned that, and it is very poetic and it is very Bango, like, he left a note with his family, and apparently they never saw him again. Like, he got on a banca and just, like, paddled out. And the note said that he just didn't want to be a burden, or he didn't want to grow old. Left.
And that's so, like, the legend of Bango. What a way to, like, underscore that.
Exactly. Right. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, like, one of the criticisms I got from this project was like, oh, it's just a bunch of, like, portraits of cowboys. And, like, honestly, if I could go back and if I had actually, I guess you could call it like a regret, and I don't really have too many regrets, but I really wish I documented my time with Bango a little more, because he's just such a character. And, like, it taught me so much about, you know, how to interact with people on assignment, you know, like, a lot of times, you know, so many of these people are, they're just curious about you as well. And you know, if all you need to do sometimes is just like sit down with them and like have a little conversation, you know, and see where that goes. And I had like, you know, I had a great time with him. I had a great time with the rodeo director. I had a great time with like everyone that was there. And I think a lot of my travel work is that it's just like, just trying to get comfortable enough to, you know, to engage in people and get to learn about them, you know, because they're already doing me such a huge favor, you know, answering my questions and being my subject. So yeah, the least I can do is just like, you know, like just be human and like talk to them as well.
Yeah, be human. I love that. I mean, that what you just said kind of highlights all the work a photographer does when he's not shooting. You know, it's like, it's making that connection to the subjects, to the people, building that trust. No, I think I want to move this over, since we're talking about this, to portraiture and what your approach is. I mean, you've shot a lot of people, not even on assignment, like different personalities, from comedians like Red Olero, you know, different personalities. How do you go into a shoot, especially if it's like the first time you're meeting this prominent figure? How do you, you know, get to those, you know, especially if you don't have a lot of time, you don't have 11 days to like be this person's roommate or something, you know? You know, what has experience taught you when you're shooting portraits?
I think there's many ways to go about portraiture. You know, when I was like early on in my career, so yeah, around the time I did the rodeo, I would try to find opportunities. I try to find, you know, I just try to find people. I try to find good light. I try to find a good situation. It was all about that. It was all about like finding, like just all these elements to kind of fit together. So in a sense, I actually had very little control over the image making process. It was just like, okay, that's available. That light kind of looks nice. That wall, it's not bad. So it's just me trying to figure out the best possible combination for that to take place. But it left this like part of me that was like, I do want to take more control. I do want to be able to have or to produce images that have a little more intention. And so around 2012, so around the time I shot the rodeo, I was a big fan of this photographer in New York. His name is Chris Buck, and excellent portrait photographer. Honestly, like along the lines of like Annie Leibovitz, Mark Seliger, not as popular, but he's photographed, you know, the same people they've photographed. And he was doing he does internship programs, and I reached out to him and he was like, sorry, where are you writing from? And I'm like, oh, I'm writing from the Philippines. And he's like, I'm sorry, I don't take foreign interns yet. And I'm like, okay, if you do in the future, please let me know. I'd love to be part of it. And I did that for 3 years until he finally said, you know what? You've been bugging me for like 3 years. You seem serious enough. In 2015, I spent 5 months in New York learning from Chris. And
wow.
Chris is the type of photographer that I remember, like, before every shoot, it would be so calculated. He's a pretty, you know, eccentric person. He would, like, one of the first shoots we had together, he would literally, like, sit down by himself and on his, like, long sheet of paper would just, like, write down very specific ideas. Subject, you know, looking at sky, blue background or like gray backdrop, and then he would list down a bunch of props, right? So like I remember one of the shoots that I assisted him on. It was his subject was Paul Giamatti and it was for GQ, and he had like two full pages of props that me and his first assistant had to source. And it was this really long, like super quirky grocery list, right? Like he wanted like a vintage like World War II flamethrower,
What?
He wanted cotton candy, which I had no idea. Like, you'd think it'd be easy to find cotton candy in a city like New York.
Yeah.
But it was so, so difficult. I spent like an hour looking for fucking cotton candy. It was so incredibly difficult.
People must have been like, who is this adult, like, who is dude this chump asking exactly me for cotton candy?
Dude, it was hilarious. And like, that list just kept going on and on and on and on. And like, during the shoot, it was this large table with all the props. And when we got the set, Paul Giamatti was like, I'm not posing with any of that. Like, I'm not touching anything. And I was just like, how do you pivot, right? Like, how does this even happen?
Come on, the flamethrower, man. Use the flamethrower.
So we were like, oh, crap. This is like, I wonder how Chris is going to pull this off. Because if this were me, I'd freak out and like maybe do a corner headshot and call it a day and like just say sorry to GQ, right? Like, and then and just like, you know, take the L. But no, he was like, hey, why don't we go for a walk? Chris was like, why don't we go for a walk? And we like, we're walking around New York, just outside like one of the studios there. And there was a store opening for, I think it was like a barber shop or something. And it had this like giant like balloon, like it was like massive, right? On a string. And I just remember like Chris looked at it and was like, oh, wouldn't it be so funny if like, you know, maybe we can agree, maybe he can agree to like hold this balloon for like 2 seconds. We get like two frames and that's all we need. And he's going to look like a grumpy kid, like holding a balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
So he like got the light down and everything. And then he was like, hey, Sonny, can you hand him the balloon? And I like approach, you know, really, I think this was like right after Fresh Out of Compton. So he was kind of still in character, maybe. And so I remember like giving him the balloon and he just like grabbed it from me and like perfect image.
And man, so, I need like, to look this up. This is crazy.
Yeah, yeah, you should check it out. It's pretty crazy. And it was just like there was so much prep involved for like one image and there was so much intention and so much like, hey, this might work out, but you know, the next 200 things are not going to work out, but the 201st like object might. And that was like Chris's thing, right? He would like just be so prepared and he would always have a plan and he would always have projects. He would always have like, you know, things cooking. And another thing we worked on during my internship.
Sorry, not to cut you off again too, but that's just, I just really resonated with that. Thank you for that story, man. That was so nice to see your like photography hero and work with him on that kind of project. And that really resonates with me because I come from a advertising filmmaking background and it's like 90% preparation and getting stuff according to plan and approved. And on the day of the shoot, you have to execute on all these things. But there's such beauty in spontaneity that I really love when I'm not shooting ads and we're just doing stuff for fun. And, you know, kind of having, not being precious with your plans when you go into something and, you know, fuck it, let's go outside, let's do something. It kind of opens you up for magic, you know, with your subject. No? Yeah, so I just wanted to say that's so cool.
100%, I agree. But that's the thing, right? Like sometimes, yeah, spontaneity is great and all, but sometimes you need to kind of like, you know, like stack the deck in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, spontaneity is great, but like, well, how do I increase my chances of this, you know, spontaneousness, like being, you know, epic? And it was just that really, like, it was just like, we need to get him to like have a prop or something. Otherwise it's going to be a boring headshot in a corner and, you know, like it might be a photograph that might not be remembered. So yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, like if there was a lot of planning, there's a lot of like, Chris always had a lot of projects. There was this one book that he recently released. It was called Gentleman's Club and it's portraits of partners of strippers. So like the husbands, and the boyfriends, the wives of strippers. And it was, it was very early days when I was, you know, I was his intern while he was working on that project. But fast forward to like two or three years after, it's a full book. But how that started was literally like, I have an idea for one portrait. And, you know, like, it took a while, obviously. Like, I think it was a total of like 26 to 30 portraits. But it took a while because, first of all, you have to find like people who are willing to be photographed. Mm-hmm. It's a very touchy subject. And how do you photograph it? I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you look it up, like the range of it, it's just so like, it's so crazy. And I think just to kind of like sum that little, you know, part of my life up, with portraiture, before I used to be kind of like, okay, let's just hope everything kind of falls into place. And then working with Chris, it was like, I have to be able to plan. And then after the internship, you know, like I kept falling into this trap of like, you know, just trying to force to make things work. But sometimes they didn't. And I had to get used to that. And so I think a lot of my recent portraiture is a mix of that. It's like, okay, I'll have stuff in mind. But I'm also like pretty flexible to be like, okay, none of that worked. But hey, there's a nice looking like, you know, sunset just down the street. Let's try that and see if it, you know, see if it brings out something. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I think we can use that as a segue to talk about intentionality, right, in your photographs with food this time. So let's cross over to food. And since we are, you know, on the topic of shooting portraits, I also realized that you shoot portraits of chefs, right? You shoot their food and you shoot the people that make the food. And I find that really interesting. Does that in any way tie into, you know, when you shoot their food, does that affect, you know, how you want to capture them as people?
I mean, most of the time it does, really. And I mean, you know, we just a couple of sentences ago just talked about like intentionality. Like there's a reason these chefs put what they put on a plate, right? Like mm-hmm. their whole philosophy, their whole like, or what they believe in, or it doesn't even have to be that deep, like what they find delicious.
Yeah.
So and if I don't get it immediately, like I try to ask them, like, so what is the whole point of this dish? Like, well, what makes it, right? And they'll be like, oh man, you got to get the center all like creamy and stuff. And like, you know, like just being able to engage, you know, them in conversation like that often produces like a better portrait or a better like food photo. Just honestly, like a lot of it isn't about, you know, the props or the type of plate that's used or like, honestly, mm-hmm. even the lighting. It really is just about like, hey, is that thing supposed to look crispy? Because it doesn't. And like, should we replace it? And, you know, if it's supposed to look crispy, that better look, you know, like it'll freaking like shatter when you like bite into it. So it's a lot of that. It's like, there's a lot of collaboration, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'll take a frame and I almost always like shoot tethered to my computer. I'll take a couple of frames and then, you know, when I'm happy, I'll show it to the chef or I'll show it to the cook and they'll be like, oh damn, like, yes, that's definitely what we want with our food. And there's a lot of collaboration really, like whether it's between me and the chef or me and a stylist, you know, there's so much back and forth.
Yeah. What is, maybe paint us a picture for what does like a new relationship look like, a working relationship with a client, right? When you know, sit down to talk with these people, I mean, one thing that comes to mind is what you did, your work with Rebel Bakehouse, which I just tried recently when we went up to Baguio. Super good. But I just love the visual identity of pastries against this blue sky. You know, it just looks so clean and it just jumps out at you. And
And I just find that really interesting on how, even like with Crosta Pizza, I know there's like this visual identity that you're able to get in a photograph, you know. And does that come with, you know, long conversations with the owner, or is it a mood board? You know, I'm just curious, you know, how do those things start, or are they just different every time?
I mean, to be completely honest, it really is different every single time. I guess if we talk about process, the easiest one to explain, I think, is like, and they're one of my favorites to work with, would be Kodawari. Mm-hmm. A lot of that, or why it was very easy for me, is their intention was so solid. Like, Jake is a huge like anime fan, and even before we worked together, the content that he would put together, like, because he's a home cook, and he would make these like really stupid videos with like, yeah, you know, like with like crazy transitions, and I'm like, man, this guy is a trip. Like I haven't met him and I already feel like we're friends, right?
I love Jake.
And yeah. He's right. And so he calls me up. He's like, hey, do you want to shoot, you know, our food? And I'm like, hell yeah. I mean, like, I'm so happy you asked. And we did not talk about plans. It was just like, let's just shoot, you know. I think back then it was just the gyudon, maybe shroom the don. Shroom don. Yeah, I think it was just the two. And so I told him to get, let's shoot the bowls separately. And then let's also shoot like components separately. And around that period, I was also binge watching a lot of food wars. And I'm not an anime guy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really not. But Food Wars was such a, like, it so resonated with like their brand as well. And I was like, okay, I've never shot food this way. I wasn't even sure I had the technical capability, right? Like, prior to that, I don't think I've shot anything super like high contrast or very like polished. But that's what I wanted. I was like, no, it has to look like borderline cartoony. Like, the egg yolks have to look, you know, they have to look super obscene. And yeah, I just found myself in Jake's place, and we were the two of us. So we didn't even have a food stylist. The two of us were like styling one of the bowls, and it took about maybe an hour of just trying to like get the rice the right shape and, you know, putting the elements in, and even just like pre-lighting. Like, it was really difficult for me to get the light correct, because I still kind of like sometimes struggle with lighting, or like I still kind of like, you know, course correct as I go. And that's what I was doing on the shoot, right? So, you know, we take a frame and be like, what does that need? That needs, you know, the rice needs to be a little higher. Or like, you know, we just kind of like bounce ideas off of each other. And when I took the images home, I was like, this is missing something. And I've never done it with my old or like older food photography, but it needed like sparkles, and I had to like find it. Like, I had to download like brushes on Photoshop to add a little bit of, you know,
get the anime vibe.
Exactly. I learned different like retouching techniques, and you know, when I sent it back to Jake, he was like, shit, man, this is it. Like, this is like the first of many shoots. And that's, you know, like, when they opened up the restaurant in Salcedo, it was that again. It was like, okay, we've done anime. Like, how do we, like, maybe there's another stupid idea like lingering there that we could, because these guys are super playful, and I wanted to like, you know, kind of like go off that. And we took, there's this Instagram account called Shibuya Meltdown, where a bunch of like salary men just like, really super messy, right?
It's like passed out in train stations in Tokyo. Yeah,
exactly. So we took that, and we got a bunch of friends together who looked like salarymen, and we made them part of the scene. And then we got a cosplayer as well to throw in the scene, and it was just like, it's just really like silly, but
that's
it's
so
coming
fun
together. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know. So it, the thought process is just like, it really is that. It's like, what is their intention, or like, who are they speaking to, right? And how can I help get that idea from either like their mind or like their mood board onto paper, you know? And I think, like, to give another example, like a complete 180 would be like a fancy place like Metronome. And I love Metronome. I think their food is incredibly delicious. And I think they are probably one of the most refined restaurants in Manila right now. And I just want to do them justice, right? And I think the light should be very, or like when I started doing the thought process for it, I wanted the light to be very, very even, but also very like classy and expensive looking. And like, if you travel around Europe, and I haven't had like the luxury of that, but from films, like just seeing or observing the light from, you know, like on tables there, that's kind of like what I was trying to get. And
I love that. It's like a cross reference at a different medium. No?
100%. Yeah. It's that. And that's what I tried to do. And on set, you know, there were a bunch of hiccups, like with the light. But once I got it down for like one dish, I just applied the whole thing through, like, I think we did like 3 shoots together, and it was the same exact light for all the dishes with them. And yeah, I'm super happy with how it turned out, you know?
Nice. So yeah, I think we can try to change his perspective in the way of, since we're talking about your work with clients in food, for younger photographers out there who want to, you know, have a good relationship with a client and start things off in a good way, kind of like how you were with Jake, syempre, but minsan, swerte din sa client, diba? And it has to be like a two-way street. But what are some of the things you do when you want to work with a client and, you know, make sure the work comes out good? Are you the type to prepare like a deck? Is it a mood board? Is it like you guys have, you know, sit down to eat first or something?
I think communication is key. So like a lot of my relationships really start with, you know, with asking questions or like being able to ask the right questions. That can be email. If they give you, you know, the chance to meet them in person, and if you take that, I think being able to understand what their needs are, you know, like as a client or, as a client, like, I think that's a very important place to start. But also like preparing mood boards, I sometimes fall into the trap of like just pulling all these references, but they honestly, I don't know if I can recommend it. Because a lot of the context gets lost. And these are things you can never replicate here. You know, the light is always going to be different. A lot of times, a lot of images, especially in food photography, right? If you like pull up a Pinterest board and type something in, French food or Italian food or whatever, the number one difference you'll see is like produce. Like,
Oh yeah,
that's a good point. We're not the type of country where you could just like go out there and like grab like fresh fennel or like, you know, tomatoes on a vine. Like it's not going to work.
Even the size, like the leeks abroad are like huge.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very specific example, right?
But it's a good practical tip actually. Yeah. It sets expectations too.
Exactly. It's difficult because like, how do you convince someone who may not be able to visualize it, right? Like, how do you convince someone that we need to make an image that kind of looks like this, but I don't have a sample picture?
Yeah.
You know, it's so difficult. But the only workaround is like, okay, you want to shoot a pizza place? Go out, buy a pizza, bring it back home, and then dress it up. And then, you know, and then suddenly you're creating your own mood board with your own images. And I think that's such a valuable asset that we all forget, right? Like, it's because maybe we don't have the time, we don't have the resources, maybe sometimes we're lazy, but if you can, if you have the time, if you have the resources, by all means, you know, there's so many other people that want to collaborate these days. There's so many like food stylists and prop stylists that want to get their work out, right? And they're just looking for photographers who need to do the same. And it's just about trying to find and build that network. And I think like at the middle of the pandemic, or right before the pandemic, sorry, I wanted to beef up my food photography portfolio, because back then it was a lot of travel, it was a lot of portraiture, but I wanted to do more food. And what I did was I worked with a food stylist and a prop stylist, and we just shot like, it was just like four different layouts. We did a thing where fish was like the centerpiece, and it allowed me to practice my lighting. It allowed me to practice my, my composition. And like my editing skills.
That goes in everyone's portfolio, right?
100%. So I was happy. Prop stylist was happy. Our food stylist was happy. Everyone had, you know, four, and you know, like, not to toot my own horn or like the team, but like we had four great images to show from this one day of, you know, working together. And I think that's really the best, that's the best way forward. And I remember also, like, you know, you mentioned the images for Rebel. How that started out was like I had some old images of some objects. I think it was like a honeycomb or something that I photographed against white. And I just replaced the background with sky. And then I sent that over to some of the people at Rebel. And they were like, okay, we can't quite see it yet, but you know, like we'll try it with a croissant, and if it works, then we'll push that direction. And it was like one full day of like balancing pastry on like nylon cords and stuff, and you know, replacing the background during the shoot. And yeah, it lasted pretty long. I mean, they're still using the images today. It's like it's on tote bags, it's on their t-shirts, it's on the menus,
stickers.
Kind of crazy how that blew up. Yeah. Yeah.
Ang ganda. Yeah, thanks for sharing those, man. I think it's unique insight hearing your actual process with clients. But just to wrap it up, I do have a few more questions. And
sure.
I think what always comes up with visual artists, especially photographers too, is promoting your work, you know, on Instagram, on Facebook. Because it's a weird situation where, you know, it feels cringy to promote yourself, but how are they going to know? You know, how are they going to see your work? And it's a attention economy, right? We're all trying to grab everyone's attention. It's hard sometimes to say, hey, look at me, guys. But, you know, how do you manage to build that network with your online presence?
To honestly, like, there's no shame. There's no shame in it. And I think the people you want to eventually work with are the people who understand that and respect that and don't think of it as something for you to be ashamed of, really. Like, one of the first things I did this year, and I started pretty early, was I came out with a list of restaurants that I want to shoot for. And I don't know all the contact information, right? So I've been like cold DMing, I've been emailing people. It hasn't yielded much yet. But hey, if I bug them enough, you know, eventually maybe one of them is going to say yes. And if I get like 1 out of 10, then I'm pretty good. And I think there's many different channels to do that, right? Like, I'm not super active on Instagram, but like I said, like maybe those 2 or 3 people that are hungry, you know, maybe one of them is like, has a business that's about to open or something. And they'll take notice and they'll be like, hey, I always remember this dude like posts really nice pictures of like pizzas or sandwiches or whatever, you know? So yeah, all like, I think it's just a mix of that, you know, like reach out to people, cold emails, cold calls, cold DMs. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think also just like putting your work out there in as many different mediums, it's like, I think it's important. And then also, like, every now and then, maybe revisit mediums that aren't, you know, like, top of mind or aren't as fast moving. Recently, like, for example, I've been selling prints, and I've been keeping it pretty low key, mostly because, like, the production side of it, there's a lot of, like, back and forth. There's a lot of, like, oh, what size can you print it at? Oh, is this, like, numbered? Is this signed? Is this editioned? Like, right now, I just don't have the capacity to, like, do that full steam, but it's something I'm exploring, and I think that's something I want to eventually, like, slowly break into. I'm not familiar at all with the world of, like, fine art, but if it goes that direction, or if I have, like, a part of me in that arena, then I don't know, maybe there's going to be name recall for something, you know, and maybe that will lead to something else. So honestly, like, as many avenues as you can, just, like, because who else is going to do it? Like, if you don't put yourself out there, honestly, and, like, even the best do that, you know, like, self-promotion is king, really. Like, there's no other way to go.
Maganda. Even if there's a theme that's coming out from this conversation, it's that, you know, you aren't ashamed to go extra, go the extra mile, whether it's looking for cotton candy or a flamethrower in New York, or DMing all these dream clients, hounding your idol. Just go for it.
For 3 years. Yeah.
I think I wanted to ask then, kind of related to that, is maybe just to top it off with like mental health, which is like a topic where a lot of creatives, I think, can benefit from. Because, you know, there's no roadmap to this profession, you know. Sometimes you make it, sometimes you're in the shitter. There's no, like, clear trajectory for a career path. And I like asking this to people who are able to monetize their passion. Musicians, photographers, whatever. How do you still make photography fun for you? You know, like, you know, does it remind you of work too much now? Or are there moments where you're just traveling and you're like, yeah, I'm just going to shoot for myself, you know?
That's a great question. I think before I answer that, like, I think I should mention that I have a pretty good support system. Like, my family's been great. Like, my wife's been great also. And like, she's a fellow creative, so she gets it. You know, after work, we kind of, like, share our struggles with each other. We talk about it, and we talk about how, you know, maybe at some point we should be making work together. And that's something we want to explore in the future. So yeah, like, I think it's super important to have a good support system. I have a lot of good friends also who, and, like, when creatives get together and when we make chismis, like, we, it's a great way of filtering out people that we just don't want to deal with. And I'm going to be, like, blunt and honest, but I think that's nature's, like, communal, like, it's almost like a filter. It's like, and whether the chismis is true or not, it's just a way to filter who you want to give time to. Exactly. You know, like, that person's not great. He did this. So maybe I'll be cautious when I approach him. And it helps us kind of, like, calibrate ourselves for that. So definitely a good support system. I guess to answer your question, to be completely honest, I've had a lot of, like, good mentors, and I've had instances where words of some people would kind of, like, stick in my head, but not necessarily bad people. And it's not bad advice or anything, but it's bits of words that have, you know, made me question, like, my purpose, or like, if I started doing this for fun or for fulfillment, why am I doing it for work now? Or how did it transition? Or, like, what happened along the way? And do I need to find myself, or can they coexist? Right. So I think I've had to deal with that constant conversation in my head for as long as I can remember. I think maybe, like, 2012 was when it got very, very, very loud. And I still ask myself that, right? Like, is it still fun? And you know what? For many days, I'll come home exhausted and I'll be like, shit, that wasn't worth it. Like, yeah, I made that much money, but like, I'm fucking exhausted. I'm super tired. And I'll like, you know, there is like sometimes like self-destructive behavior where I like tend to eat too much or like drink too much. But every now and then I'll catch myself and be like, you know, like at the height of the pandemic when I was still living with my parents, like there'd be some days where they have like a little extra room and I just like walk into there and the light looks really nice. And I'll be like, oh, fuck it, let's do it. And I'll set up a background and I'll get like a funny or like a piece of vegetable from the kitchen, or like one of the images that I really liked that I produced because I was just like messing around was, I made this image of like melting twin popsicles on the floor. Puddle and then the two sticks. And I had a blast. And like, my intention was just to like, you know, to any like Filipino kid or Filipino my age who sees this, the second they see it, they're going to recognize the color and they're going to recognize the two sticks. Because they're not like this. So the sticks are kind of like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because of how they were packaged. And I'm like, they're instantly going to recognize this. And this is going to like resonate with someone. And dude, like, I sold two of those prints. You know what I mean? Like, and it wasn't even like my intention. The intention was just to like, oh, hey, the light's kind of cool here right now. Let's play.
That's so cool. It's just play, you know, no agenda, just, you know, expression.
And honestly, like, that's when I feel like there's no pressure. So if I fail, then like, what's going to happen? Like I'm not, you know, getting a client upset. I'm not losing money. I wasn't even losing time. I wasn't doing anything in the first place. You know, I was just praying. It's very often that I will catch myself just doing that, honestly.
Dude, yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Sunny. That's, I think, you know, our finding that healthy relationship with art is really like a lifelong conversation. And that's kind of the reason why I do the podcast too and talk to all these creatives. So thanks for sharing that. And I think, you know, we can end it at that. But thanks for your time, Sunny. I think great stories, great insight, and glad to finally talk to you. We should have dinner sometime soon.
Yeah, man, it's been nice chatting with you. Thanks for having me. And if you're ever in the area, I don't know, a sandwich, a burger, or some noodles, man. Just let me know.
Sounds good, man. Sunny, thanks so much, man.
Thanks. Have a good night, Gio.
All right, that was it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for sticking it out until the end. Please know that our whole team that works on Kwentong Creatives really does this out of a passion for creativity and just sharing as much value as you can. Mga creatives in kami, no? And we really appreciate it when you guys share the podcast and share these learnings. It really helps us grow the channel, which just makes it so much more worthwhile for us when we get to more people. So yeah, follow us on our socials at Kwentong Creatives on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And also join the Facebook group.